to the second hour of Up North News for this Friday, October 21st. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Aaron Zomers has the day off. Luke Mathers is filling in the producer chair here. Good morning, Luke. Nope. I'm sorry. That was not nice. Luke is having some audio issues, equipment issues. I'm really expecting at some point we prefer you listen on our fine network of local radio stations, but if by chance you catch the video feed, you will at some point see Luke rip the microphone off its stand and stomp it to death with his feet. So stay tuned. There may be more to come whenever we do finally hear from Mr. Mathers. If you'd like to get in touch with the show, 715-388-7155, and our email address is radio@upnorthnewswi.com. We will hear this hour from Mark Jacob, as we often do on Fridays, a former editor at the Chicago Tribune and the Chicago Sun-Times, as we talk about ways that the national political scene is being covered by the media over the previous week. We spent a lot of time in the first hour of the program talking about groups primarily that are conservative aligned. In some cases, the trouble that they're making in training people to not merely be polling place observers, but to perhaps become an impediment to a peaceful voting place. But we also talked about groups and people that have been Republican, vote Republican, lean Republican, saying that they have seen enough and that the threats to democracy posed by some Republicans are too much to bear to have them vote for the GOP yet again. Now, they're far from alone. There's certainly people on the left and in the center who are working hard against these efforts as well. A couple of them are outlined in a new article by Jesse O'Poyne in the Cap Times. The headline is Groups Push Back on Threats to Democracy Ahead of the November Election. She notes that with less than a month to go until Wisconsin's election, officials, candidates, and activists are sounding the alarm on efforts to sow doubts about election security, while at the same time working to ensure voters are equipped to cast their ballots. She writes about groups like the Defend Democracy Project and Secure Democracy USA that have issued reports and they have held press briefings detailing the perceived threats to democracy and have attempted to educate voters about the state's election system. The only thing I would take issue with there is that the press briefings, she writes, details perceived threats to democracy. And there's more than a few of us who would take the word, perceived out of there, that these are indeed threats to democracy and that these are folks that aren't just blowing some smoke hoping to win elections, but, would indeed carry out things that would do anything from suppress voting to outright, cheat, rig, and overturn elections. Rebecca Parks, research director of the Defend Democracy Project, tells Jesse, Wisconsin kind of stands out just in terms of the comprehensive relentlessness with which there have been these ongoing attacks on both the 2020 election and the 2022 election. The group recently compiled a report which declared, quote, democracy in Wisconsin is under attack by Donald Trump and his allies, citing conservatives with grassroots organizers, legal analysts, and academic experts. There's a lot going on, Park says, but it is something on voters' minds. I think people are concerned about it, particularly in states like Wisconsin, where there's been this never-ending fight about the last election. And now here we are, 2 years later, getting ready to do it all over again. The report also cites something we talked about not long ago, an analysis published in the Election Law Journal showing that from 2020 to now, Wisconsin, in a ranking of states by fewest obstacles to voting, has fallen and fallen hard. It was bad enough when we were 38th on that list, and now we're down to 47 on that list of states with the fewest obstacles to voting. We've certainly seen that in rulings by the Wisconsin State Supreme Court led by right-wing conservatives, and we certainly see it in a number of other places, not to mention all of the many bills that the Republican-led legislature tried to pass. since January of 2021. Jesse O'Point writes, at least 51 election-related bills were introduced in the legislature, most introduced by Republicans. And, of course, Governor Tony Evers has vetoed them, has put himself out there as essentially the hockey goalie that is preventing some terrible anti-democracy legislation from becoming law. But obviously, if Evers loses to Tim Michaels, or even if Evers wins, but Republicans win just a few more seats in the legislature to get a supermajority, they can override Evers' vetoes and they can go ahead and impose these laws that will suppress voters, that will raise more obstacles, that will kick legally registered voters off the rolls and force them to register again in the hopes that some of them won't and just won't vote. These are very real things that are happening. And there's just a series of heightened rhetoric and scrutiny. And it's something that Jesse writes all about in this article that you can find at captimes.com. We're going to take a first break for this hour. When we come back, we're hoping to talk to Mark Jacob, former editor at the Chicago Tribune, Chicago Sun-Times, as we talk about how national media is covering not only things in Wisconsin, but across the country as well. All on a beautiful Friday, heading into a super nice fall weekend. You're up north. Friday morning time where we frequently talk to Mark Jacob, a former editor at the Chicago Tribune and Chicago Sun-Times, and now somebody whose Twitter account is a must-read to try to keep a lot of the national media honest in the way that they are covering politics and campaigns. We'd normally maybe get in a musical note from Luke Mathers as well, but Mark, we seem to have a microphone issue with Luke, so the poor boy is just, if you've noticed him pantomiming over there, it's something we've never had to experience before, and he's going to have a lot to say whenever you can get that microphone fixed. But
don't you think maybe the equipment is trying to send a message?
I think it's telling him that's what you get for saying you'd fill in for Aaron on a Friday. You should know better. But anyway, appreciate you being here as well to talk about how things have gone this week. And I will admit the first thing I want to ask you about is something that you you and many others have ripped into the New York Times for. And as a result, I'm going to have to confess that I haven't read it, but I see a lot of people very upset at, the way you put it, the cowardice of the New York Times for a headline that says, how disinformation splintered and became more intractable. And it's very much written in, I guess, passive voice and right. Doesn't take any responsibility for the role that they and other national media folks have played. I guess yeah. if you tell me I should read the article, I will. But can you give us an overview of what they said and what made people so angry?
No, but the article itself is a perfectly fine article. It notes that while some of the major social media platforms like Facebook and Instagram have done maybe a better job of policing, outright lies and outright disinformation. And I'm not talking about differences of opinion. Everyone respects those. I'm talking about just flat out disinformation lies. They've done a better job of policing that, but the story was pointing out that a lot of kind of secondary or emergent or startup social media platforms are kind of giving people more of a opportunity to spread lies. And it was totally focused on the right wing, which is, that's ground zero for disinformation today. I'm not saying that, the leftists don't sometimes say things that are wrong, but there's an entire structure built up for the right wing to spread lies. And so the article's fine. The headline, as you just read it, has, disinformation spreads and all this. It's all this kind of disembodied thing. It's this, if the actor in the story is the disinformation instead of the right wing. So the headline treatment, if you're familiar with the New York Times, they usually have a headline of about, 8 or 10 words, and then they have you know, a very long sentence summarizing it. Neither of those said anything about Republicans, right-wing, conservatives, nothing. It was just like some magical disinformation somewhere showed up to do something. And in the news business, we used to kind of call that the mistakes were made approach, which is, yes. You know, when you see politicians who have done something really awful show up and say, well, mistakes were made. So, you know, there's no subject to that sentence really other than the mistake itself. And so, you're right. The passive voice is a way. And the thing about that is that the New York Times, I think, does that out of its own safety, its own attempt to not take sides or be seen as taking sides. And therefore, everything has this kind of vagueness. Everything has this kind of, well, it's nobody's fault. It's all just something general out there. And, you know, it's almost like they're trying to be vague on purpose.
Even though by you know, calling it like you see it, by calling it like it is, it doesn't make you partisan. It doesn't even make you political. It makes you a journalist who's telling the full and complete and accurate story.
No, but Pat, it's hard to tell the truth these days. I mean, it is. I mean, you're going to get blowback. And the thing about it is because you've had this, you know, this huge difference in the behaviors of the Republican and Democratic parties. And as we've talked before, Democrat Party has its own kind of bad actor, people who are problematic. You know, I mean, Cuomo in New York, for example, had to get bounced out from his behavior. So I'm not saying the Democrats are always right. They're certainly not. But the Republican Party is far more corrupt and dishonest today. It's just this. There's been this huge gap emerged in the last few decades, according to my observation, in which the Republicans have just decided that they're going to lie a lot. That they're just not going to, they don't care about the truth. The truth doesn't help them. And therefore, they're just going to ignore it. And if you're reporting on reality, if you're a news person who's describing something happening and you try to act like, well, Republicans and Democrats, same old thing, you know, sharks versus jets, it doesn't matter which side, then you're not telling the truth. Right. And if you do tell the truth and you say the Republican Party has emerged as basically a criminal enterprise that is trying to steal elections, intimidate poll workers, you know, erode faith in our systems of government and in our and destabilize our society. If you say all those things, you sound like a radical. And you sound like a radical to some people because you're just telling the truth. I was thinking the other day that I love history and I've written history books and stuff like that. And I was thinking about the truth is that what's happening today is so much like what happened in Germany in the early 1930s, so much, where you have this radical fascist group emerging and you have this leftist group that's been being demonized and you have these, a lot of people in the center, a lot of moderates or centrists who just kind of want to get by and don't know which side to take and are really ripe for being intimidated by fascists and falling over to their side. And that's, I think, what we're seeing a lot of today.
And that whole thing of history repeating itself, I think you have been among the others who have put up excerpts from, I don't know if it was the New York Times or Time Magazine or others, you know, back then talking about the charisma of right. the right. new leader of the, you know, right. the German Socialist Party or what have you.
And right. the very first reference to Adolf Hitler in the New York Times talks about how, you know, he has a peculiar political talents and how most observers say that the anti-Semitism is just a ploy and it's not serious and it's not violent. And so it's all good. I'm glad we were assured in 1922 that, you know, a decade and a half later, Hitler wouldn't be murdering Jews. So, you know, so the New York Times gets things wrong and minimizes threats. But what I was thinking about the other day was that if you were a journalist in Germany in 1932, and you were describing what was happening, I'm sure there were people who were thinking, well, he's just off the rails. He's just so exaggerating. He's not fair. He's not being fair to the Nazis. And so you get the same thing today where you have an active movement trying to destabilize democracy. And you have people. And when someone points that out, they're accused of being unfair.
And the thing is, not only do you have a failure to adequately describe threats by mainstream media, but back then, you know, they had their own Tucker Carlson in Father Coughlin and some of the other, you know, extreme radio commentators of the day which I think some people would hear all this and go, oh, so there's nothing really new. But people like you and me would say, no, there's a lesson here. History right. is repeating itself. So what are you going to do about it? Are you just going to let it happen? And that is the troubling answer to that is seen in a different New York Times article where they put up the results of a poll they did with Siena College. And it really talked about how voters are increasingly open to candidates who publicly reject the 2020 election results. Now, by party identification, only 4% of Democratic respondents said that they were open to a candidate like that. Among independents, still a troubling 15% said they were, you know, very open to such a candidate. And on the Republican side, 36% said they're open to a candidate who publicly rejects the 2020 election results. Another 35% said they are somewhat open to such candidates. Well, that's 71% right there. And it you know, when we talk about how is it an insurrection, you know, adjacent participant like Derek Van Orden, you know, or Dave Estenson, the state Senate candidate here in Western Wisconsin, how are they winning? How is it that they could be leading in the polls? You see that openness, and that is the effect of messaging that has been going on, not since January 6th, but well before that as well.
Well, and there's also this kind of rooting for our team kind of thing going on. That's to me, that's what the Herschel Walker thing is. They know he's a train wreck. They know he's a terrible candidate, but he's their terrible candidate. And therefore, they feel like they have to support them. And it becomes this kind of irrational, kind of turn your brain off, just punch the button for Republican, and then you're there. And that's so dangerous for our society. I mean, Pat, I actually, back in the past, I liked ticket splitters. I thought I kind of respected the idea that somebody would assess a candidate based on his or her merits. And I mean, right now, I mean, I'm saying vote against all Republicans just because, honestly, when you see the way that the Republican leadership nationally operates, anyone who votes for a Republican is helping that. I mean, they're helping try to steal elections and try to intimidate poll workers and things like that. And I can't have that. So, but generally, I mean, I'd rather people vote for the person rather than kind of rah-rah, you know, wave the flag and just vote because you used to be you're a Republican your whole life, so you continue being a Republican. It's not, it ain't your grandfather's Republican Party. It's just not.
No, it's not. But unfortunately, still far too many people believe the problem is just divisiveness itself. The article right. quotes Ben Johnson, a 33-year-old filmmaker from New Orleans and a Democrat, who says, I do agree that the biggest threat is survival of our democracy, but it's the divisiveness that's creating this threat. It feels like on both sides, people aren't agreeing on facts anymore. We can't meet in the middle if we can't agree on simple facts. But what's missing there is the historical perspective that divisiveness comes from a particular side of the aisle that right. wants to say that, you know, government doesn't work. In my mind, it always comes right back to that fateful moment when Ronald Reagan said in his inaugural address, government is the problem. It was a seed that has spread. You know, there was already cynicism, don't get me wrong, right. but that one seed, I think we are seeing that wasn't a seed. It was the start of a tumor that has people thinking, well, all government is broken. Well, it's not. Government has a role to play, but there's not nearly enough people, you know, defending good governance, and plenty of people like this Democrat in New Orleans who just says, well, it's divisive everywhere.
Right. And it's to some extent, that to me is like, we need to be nicer to Nazis argument, that they're doing horrible things, but we still need to be nice to them. No, we don't need to be nice to people who are doing horrible things. We need to confront them and stop them. And that's patriotic. I mean, to me, that's patriotic, is identifying people who are trying to make life worse for your children and grandchildren and stopping them from doing that. That's patriotic.
It is. Unfortunately, you know, people, while they do say 71% say democracy is at risk, Only 7% identified it as the most important problem facing the country. And, you know, so those are ostensibly conflicting views. But among those voters who saw democracy as under threat, 81% thought the country could fix the problem by using existing laws and institutions. So, I mean, there's a lot of faith there that the people that win in November are going to be true to democracy and helping bring people together when a lot of candidates have proven they're not ready to embrace that themselves. Mark Jacob is with us. We'll have more coming up after the break. You're up north.
Real information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. You're listening to Up North News.
To borrow a phrase from an Al Franken book, we're talking about liars and the lying liars who lie about it. Here with Mark Jacob on this Friday morning for Up North News. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Mark writes that... Well, he writes a lot that I just really enjoy. And one of them is that, you know, mainstream news has bought the idea that crime is the number one issue, but that's because of TV commercials. If Republican billionaires paid for constant TV ads about tattooed trans squirrels killing our trees, the media would be talking about the number one issue of killer squirrels. And it comes back, Mark, to a point that I made a couple of times this week. People think that they're not swayed by political ads. But they are. Advertising works, or you wouldn't see Coke and Pepsi and everybody else doing it. So, yes, all of these ads. I mean, just, again, every time I try to go onto YouTube, you know, to check things out for the show, look for music clips, what have you, like every third video, you have to sit through an entire ad, one of those, you know, racist anti-Mandela ads that makes him look like, you know, he's a participant in a riot. And, you know, so why wouldn't TV newsrooms be influenced by all these commercials as well?
Right, right. And with, down here in the Chicago area, we're seeing the same thing where, you know, these clips of people rioting or just kind of these surveillance clips are played, you know, against, you know, Democratic candidates as if Democrats are pro-crime, which is baloney. And that's become their big issue because it's, you know, they don't have any positive issues. That's the problem. So they got to talk about something. So go negative, negative, negative. And so the best way, and they know that fear actually is an emotion that really works for them. And so they've ginned up this crime issue. I mean, when you look at crime, there's several things about that. The crime, if you look at the homicide rate, you know, 8 of the top 10 states for high homicide rates are red states. You know, like states like Arkansas. This is not like Democrats like crime, which is exactly what Tommy Tuberville said when he suggested that black people were responsible for crime, and didn't get denounced by any other Republicans for
saying by any. It just came and went.
Right. And it was so they love the crime issue because I think the crime issue, the way they depict it. And again, Pat, we're not like nuts who think that no, crime is no problem. Crime is a problem. We need to stop crime, and we need to one way to stop crime is to lower poverty and find jobs for people and find training and also empower good cops to get rid of bad cops so that the good cops can keep our streets safe. I mean, we all want safe streets. We all want that. And so it's just a matter of arguing why. But then you have the Republicans arguing that Democrats like crime and, you know, crime has a black face and stuff like that. And they use it just to I just think that they like to push the fear button and they like to make people insecure. And they also like to tap into there's clearly a racist subtext to it. There just is.
Well, of course. And no matter how much we remind people about the Willie Horton ads of 1988, we also can't forget the outcome.
Right.
That George H.W. Bush won with the Willie Horton ads, as abhorrent as they were. And it certainly emboldens people who want to go even further, which, again, you and many others who watch the media were quick to point out that the right-wing website Federalist, you know, all... all but called, I shouldn't say all but called for a fascist dictatorship. They basically did call for it. And, right. you know, you put up an excerpt of it that that others did that was, you know, rather troubling in its belief of where these folks think we have to go next because of their hatred for, quote unquote, the left.
Right. That's it. This is a senior editor at Federalist. Now, Federalist is this kind of right-wing website, which, yeah, it does get, you know, some traction. It's run by Ben Dominic, who's the wife, the husband of Meghan McCain.
Oh.
And it's just part of the whole, this whole kind of right-wing structure of this kind of echo chamber of we'll just say horrible things and we'll share each other's horrible things. This guy's name is John Daniel Davidson, and he's going where... He's saying, you know, it's one of those saying the thing out loud that you've been thinking. And he's going where I've clearly thought that MAGA Republicanism has always been going, which is to authoritarianism. And this idea that, oh, we don't like government getting in our way. Well, clearly the Dobbs decision shows that they really like government getting in people's lives, getting in their uteruses. So yeah, that. So this thing came out yesterday, day or two ago, this essay of John Daniel Davidson, who says we need to stop calling ourselves conservatives. And what he says is that, you know, conservative, we're not conserving anything. The left has already won and transformed our society, and we have to get back to that. And the really scary part is when he gets down to how, you know, we don't believe in small government anymore. He says the left will only stop when conservatives stop them, which means conservatives will have to discard outdated and irrelevant notions about small government. And he puts small government in quotes. The government will have to become, in the hands of conservatives, an instrument of renewal in American life, and in some cases, a blunt instrument indeed. And he's talking about how we need more laws. We need to enforce more laws. We're going to have to arrest people who let, you know, trans people have rights. We're going to have to, he gets into the whole, we're going to have to not allow any abortion of any sort. And we're going to have to get, the government's going to have to enforce a complete, utter ban on abortion and things like that. And so he's really talking about how, okay, guys, let's forget about this whole conservatives, we don't like small government thing. We need to be authoritarian. And the thing at the end of the essay, he says, well, of course, there's always the problem that when you start becoming authoritarian and you get your way, you're not going to stop. But we'll have to deal with that after we do it. That's what he says. I mean, you know, which is, I remember, like, when I was a copy editor at the Chicago Sun-Times, one of our fellow copy editors was this guy at in the Philippines. He was an immigrant from the Philippines named Eddie Monoclaro, who was a journalist in the Philippines under Marcos. Marcos had thrown him in prison for writing the truth. And so he fled. After he got out, he fled the Philippines, came to Chicago, and got a job on the copy desk. And I was talking to Eddie one time about kind of why, you know, how the Philippines had turned authoritarian under Marcos. And I said, the idea that big government can't work, there's an old saying that Marcos used to say about government and about how you're never going to stop if once you start with big government. And I'm forgetting it. Sorry, I blew that one. But I'm trying to remember the phrase he was using. Maybe you'll remember it, or some listener will. Anyway, so the idea was that Marcos used to say, warn that big government was going to be a problem, and then he became big government, and therefore that was it. And so I think that once you have power, absolute power, you're not going to give it up. And so the fact that you have the right wing now talking about how about forget this conservative stuff, forget this like letting everyone have their way stuff, we need to put the hammer down, is just them saying what I've been saying for years, that the hard right wing wants to do. This is not freedom. This is not liberty. This is not the American way. This is the fascist way. This is just bald-faced fascism, Pat. Mm-hmm. That's what it is.
Right, and you see it in the increased admiration for somebody like Vladimir Putin and people like Kevin McCarthy, you know, talking openly about, you know, reducing support for Ukraine if Republicans were to take control of Congress. Things that, again, were instant career killers once upon a time, but not with the creeping, you know, authoritarianism that's coming into our politics. And it doesn't get called out. And an example that you retweeted was from Paul Waldman, an opinion writer with the Washington Post, who put up what he called a case study in how journalists allow politicians to lie, ensuring that the more cynical a politician is, the greater the rewards for dishonesty will be. And he uses, in this case study, one of those insider Washington newsletters called Punch Bowl News, where, again, you have Kevin McCarthy basically flat out line saying that, you know, they're looking into investigations that the Justice Department was tagging parents who spoke up at the school board meeting as terrorists. Right, right. And rather than not put in the lie, rather than investigate the lie, rather than call them out for the lie, all they put there is at a tag that says, the Washington Post fact checker dug into this one, so we'll let them speak on that. Right. Mark, why would they let somebody else speak on it when they're the news outlet?
Right. And they know that people aren't going to click that link because they're in the middle of some other story they're reading. So that's just cowardly. And it's just, this is the thing. I mean, this is the big argument in news coverage these days when you have this asymmetrical warfare between constant liars and people who are just trying to do normal politics is, you know, when you bring on the liars, do you let people lie? Do you like invite Kellyanne Conway to be on your show? You know she lies. She lies all the time. So do you. And the one argument is, yes, you should bring her on, and then you can fact check her, and then you can confront her. But that never happens. If you've ever seen Kellyanne Conway on TV, she won't stop talking. And you're trying to interrupt her, and she's going to talk. She's going to get all her message in, and then it's, well, thank you, we're out of time, and that's it. And so I really do argue that TV people need to stop putting proven serial liars on TV all the time, and they do. But if they're gonna interview people like that, they gotta fact check them in real time. They cannot like do what, yeah, as your example is, well, somebody else fact checked that and you can look that up if you feel like it. That's not serving the reader. See, Pat, it's all got to go back. If you're a journalist, it's all got to go back to what serves the reader. And I'm not talking about what serves Kellyanne Conway. I'm talking about what serves the reader. And what serves the reader is our facts and truth. And so if you're going to have somebody on who you, for some reason, there's also a difference. If it's the president saying a lie, I think you got to cover it. If it's the House Speaker or the House Minority Leader, if Kevin McCarthy lies, I think you got to recover it. But you got to confront it as a lie. But if it's some goofball like, you know, Steve Bannon or Kellyanne Conway, why do you have to put them on? They're not in any government position. They're not really. All they're trying to do is subvert your society.
Right. And I know as a longtime broadcaster, I know the inner workings of the format and the clock and hard commercial breaks and program times. I get all of that, but it will still never not frustrate me when somebody says, well, we're out of time. You literally are not. You are a 24/7 channel. And if something is important enough, you should be able to delay that commercial break or that next program and say, you know, you're here. And we're just going to stay here till we get to the bottom of it. Obviously, I'm wishing in one hand, and you can do something else in the other and see what fills up first. But I want to, in these, again, with 18 days left until the election, 18 days is still time for a lot of things to happen. And yet, Mark, you and others have noted the way that outlets, you know, the New York Times among them, is only going to discourage turnout by creating a false sense of inevitability. And in this case, you're talking about an article that the Democrats feared Red October has arrived. And to what point, Mark, do you bother putting up something like, well, it looks like the red wave is here. You may as well not vote, folks.
You know, and when you think about it, they were saying that 3 months ago, but a month and a half ago, they were saying the opposite. And now they're saying this. It's all the desire of the news media to create a storyline and to make it more dramatic. And so, oh, here's a poll. It just came out. It shows some different story. Oh, and they're gaining on us, and they're gaining on them, and they're getting in. And it's almost like they want it to be a horse race. And I mean, a real horse, you know, here it is on the back stretch, and here they're going, you know, so they want to do that because it's more dramatic and it's more entertaining, not because it's more accurate. Because really, you know what, if they really wanted to cover elections the way they should to help society and they, even to help their consumers, they wouldn't do all these stupid polls. They would be they'd be going out talking to voters. They would be examining issues and, you know, deeply. They would
really examining issues and actually getting to facts.
Right. You know, they would be explaining what's the difference between the healthcare policies that Republicans and Democrats have. They would be getting into what does it mean when you put a cap on the price of insulin. Before I forget, Pat, here's the quote that I could not think of a couple minutes ago, which is the government that governs the least governs the best.
That's
the expression. And that was the expression that Marcos, future dictator.
So there's the exhibit right there. I had a break that I couldn't move. And so even though I wanted to give Mark Jacob more time, you run up against these hard breaks because that's what computer systems and networks will do to you. And so I again apologize that we had to cut Mark off there at the very end, but making that quote, comes up so often in politics. And if I had time, and was thinking during the break, I would have instead, the intro music would have been, Eminem's Without Me, because it would have started with Guess Who's Back Again. Luke is back. Tell a friend. The microphone appears to be working now.
I just want to hear you keep rapping.
Yeah, we were not in danger of having that happen. and mysteriously, I mean, you solved a problem without still knowing exactly what the problem was. Good job, MacGyver.
Yeah, I'm going to got my work cut out for me when the show's over to figure out how to remedy the actual solution, because I had to create my own path. I said, fine, system, I will show you who's boss. And now you can hear me again.
Yes, we can. But yeah, you bypassed it. But yeah, somewhere in there, there's still a bug, because we heard you at the very top of the show and then something. And if Kirk was here, I'd blame him that maybe he kicked a button on a computer again, but it wasn't him either. So I think it's nice that you have a little mystery.
I have a feeling that it's static electricity. It is my nemesis here in the production booth. And I have a feeling that maybe what caused the problem. So I'm hoping to do some resets that I can't really do in the middle of a show once we're done, and then hoping those resets will remedy it. But for the time being, I know that I have solved the problem to the point where I can join you on air and you don't have to keep going, Luke, can we hear you now?
Continue mentioning that you're silent and making all kinds of weird, wild gestures. So now that you're back on, as we typically do during this point in the hour, talk about some of the shameless self-promotion that we do. I always have a note here at this point in my notes to mention different ways to listen. But whenever I get to the one where I want to talk about the TuneIn app or TuneIn.com or smart speakers, I always feel like I can't explain it as well as you can. And I don't know if you just have more familiarity with it or if you just stutter a lot less than me, but do you mind sharing with folks how they can use this particular app along with all the other many, many, many ways to listen to us, but TuneIn is one of them.
Yeah, TuneIn is excellent. You can just search the call signs. So the four letters that are associated with each station in your listening area, or if you want to catch some of the programming from a different listening area. Say you're living in Richland Center, but you want to hear what's going on in Oshkosh or Wausau, you can tune in to listen to WXCO in Wausau, WISS in Oshkosh, WRCE in Richland Center. So you just search those four call letters on TuneIn. It'll bring up those feeds. Or if you want to see all the feeds in one spot, you can go check out the Civic Media app, and that's downloaded where all fine apps are downloaded, either in your Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. And so many different ways to listen to the fine programming that we're putting out here.
Yeah. And again, we appreciate everybody listening, you know, on live local radio. That's our home. That's our bread and butter. But, you know, nowadays with more people on the go all the time, it's nice to have these various options, whether through apps or, again, you can listen to us as a podcast. We divide each program into three podcasts, one for each hour. So, if, you know, the title lists who the guest is that hour, if we have one. So you can, you know, really kind of tailor your listening, if you will, to, you know, what it is that you heard us talk about and, you know, what you want to hear. In our next hour, we're going to talk to Carol's weekly newsletter called State House Action. Talks about what's happening in state-level politics all around the country. She's the political editorial director for Courier Newsroom, and so we'll have our usual Friday visit with her. Though she did warn me that, again, we work for the same company, and if there's one thing I know about this company is we love meetings, and sometimes those meetings go a little long, and she's already given me the heads up that she is there is a hostage situation right now when it comes to one of these meetings that she's trapped in. Yeah, Luke, like civic media doesn't have anything like that.
No, nothing like that ever. I wasn't on a Zoom call while also doing various other things at the end of my day yesterday. That never happens. Never happens.
No. It doesn't. We mentioned what a great weekend this is going to be, and I just want to go through what it's going to look like, you know, today versus tomorrow. It's just going to be so great here on Lake Wissota. You know, we're going to get up to 66, but tomorrow 72. Richland Center, you really stick out. You're going to get 72 today, 77 tomorrow, and then 74 on Sunday. Even Amory up north is getting a 64 today, 70 on Saturday, 72 on Sunday. So really just no excuse. It's only way up north, places like Eagle River. That's going to be just 61 today and sunny, 67 tomorrow, 68 on Sunday. But you got to make sure to get out and enjoy this because, folks, it's slipping away. And I had a neighbor who was put up Halloween decorations yesterday. But I also saw he was staging the Christmas decorations so that, you know, a couple of weeks from now, rather than waiting till December, and I have waited till December before to put up the Christmas lights, and that is a tactical error, boys and girls. He's already staging some of the Christmas stuff that's going to be coming up. It is just that time of year. It's also that time of year when basketball season opens up, and the Bucks won their season opener against the Sixers in Philly yesterday with a go-ahead three-pointer from Wesley Matthews with 23.8 seconds left. Giannis had 21 points and 13 rebounds for a very close 90-88 victory. Brook Lopez scoring 17 points, and then the Bucks have their home opener Saturday against the Houston Rockets. Now, We have plenty of folks like, you know, Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation area, who is just a fanatic about the Bucks. I've already mentioned I don't pay a lot of attention to the NBA, though I find myself really drawn to the Bucks lately because Giannis is such a charismatic and interesting figure. But I don't think, Mr. Mathers, I have ever asked if you regularly or semi-regularly head out to the Fiserv Forum in Milwaukee to take in a Bucks game.
I got to go to my first Bucks game at the Fiserv Forum right before the pandemic set off. My dad, actually, everybody wanted to join in. I took my dad to the game for his birthday that January of 2020, and my older brother, older sister, and mom came with as well. And that was my first game at the Fiserv Forum, and I have not been back yet since. Mostly because of the pandemic, but I'm really hoping to be able to go this season a couple more times because they are so much fun to watch. So much fun to watch.
Yeah. I was at the Bradley Center many, many years ago. And that's a story with a twist you won't see coming whenever I get around to that one. But again, Packers are in D.C. to play the Washington Commanders Sunday at noon, and Purdue is seeking to beat the Wisconsin Badgers football team for the first time since 2003. And given the way things have been going this year, I kind of like their odds. Hope not, but that's why you play the game. Let's take this break, top of the hour, and Carolyn Fiddler in our next hour. You're up north.